Welcome, everybody, to the Reflex Blue Show. I am your host, Donovan Beery. And with us today, we're doing a show on, I think, 37 questions I'm going to ask someone from BuzzFeed, and number 19 is going to change your life.
Oh, no, you didn't tell me that.
Oh, okay. Well, something like that. So welcome, Emily Brick. How you doing?
Good. I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. So the first thing I got to ask you is, like, when I envision BuzzFeed, I just expect it, like, being eight programmers and just, like, a pile of cocaine, not actually, like, having designers. So the fact that I found out there's even a design department, like, I don't know if I want to believe this.
Oh, geez. You know, I think it started like that, maybe. Don't quote me on that, but I kind of feel like, so they started out as, like, an R&D lab in, like, 2007, I think. And technology was, like, the core of what they were doing. But, yeah, I mean, when I joined, there were already, like, I think, like, 7 or 8 designers, and now we're close to, like, 15. So I think this is, like, the biggest design team I've actually ever worked on. It's been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's, like, a legitimate agency size almost.
Yeah, I mean, I came from a design team of 3, so when I interviewed at BuzzFeed, I was like, God, 7 designers, like, what do they all do? And now I'm like, oh my God, like, there's, it's, like, crazy to think that I ever worked on a team of 3, because it's just, like, there's so much to do, and design, it's become, like, we're kind of moving to a place where design is kind of, like, permeating throughout the entire product, which, you know, it's obviously, it hasn't been like that, but we're sort of going in that direction, which is... it's kind of cool.
Now, as far as BuzzFeed, it's BuzzFeed.com. As far as BuzzFeed's concerned, do you guys just work on the design of the website, or is there more involved with the product as well?
Yeah, so there's the web app. Like, basically, we're split up between different sections of the product. We call them tribes. So there's not only the web app, but there's also, like, our native apps, which are like BuzzFeed, BuzzFeed Core app, the BuzzFeed News app. There's also experimental apps that you might not even know about, like Cute or Not is one of them. We just launched an Apple Watch app called BuzzFeed BFF, which is, it's kind of like a Tamagotchi. So there's all of these experimental apps. There's also, we have a huge data team that we work with. There's also distributed content, so... we don't only care about stuff that lives on BuzzFeed, but we also have to be cognizant of where our content lives, like, Facebook Instant Articles, the Apple News app launched with us, so it's so much more than the web app, and it's kind of interesting, because I work on the CMS team, so when editors create content, like, the initial idea was, like, oh, I'm creating an article that's going to go on the web app, but really, it's actually going to go in so many different places, like, It's hard, one of the things we're working with right now is how to give editors an idea of, like, how many places their content's going to live. It's really not just about the web app anymore. So, yeah, it's a big challenge, and it's, like, something that we're constantly, like, working with.
What was the biggest learning curve for you when you got onto the BuzzFeed team?
I think one of the biggest learning curves, and probably, like, one of the most lucrative things for me, was, like, actually getting to work with users. So we have editors in-house, right? So, like, we work with them, they're in our office. So I'm able to basically, like, build a tool and, like, walk over to an editor's desk and be like, hey, what do you think about this tool? So, like, before it was all about, like, getting analytics back, getting data back, and now it's pretty awesome, because I can just, like, go up to someone and ask them how the tools they're using are, and it's kind of humbling, because you often, like, realize things that you wouldn't have otherwise realized if you didn't have such a personal relationship with, like, your users. But it's been, like, the biggest learning curve for me, is, like, being super open to feedback, and also just, like, going out and getting feedback, because it's so easy to get now. It's pretty awesome.
And then I've seen, like, some of the stuff your guys do with feedback. Is it to see, like, you guys kind of live see when you guys launch an article of what's taking off, and, like, kind of, I guess, rebuild it, like, midway through, I've heard.
Do you mean, like, the preview in the CMS?
Oh, I didn't know. I just think I saw something where you, after you launch something, you guys have changed it based on how it's making its way through the social media chains?
Yeah, so, like, where all of the data is, like, super transparent. So you can, like, see how it's performing. You can see, like, the top social workers. And, like, using that data, you can kind of manipulate your content and, like, change it. And it's actually, like, extremely useful, I think. Without data, it's, like, hard to know. But the fact that we're able to, like, have all this data on our articles, like, the editors can, like, optimize their content. And it's actually, like, it's a great tool for them.
No, that's great. And you guys are located, is the whole team in New York City, or do you guys have offices everywhere?
We have offices actually like everywhere. So we're based out of New York. Our editorial office is in New York, and so is the tech team. And then we also have an office in LA, which is BuzzFeed Motion Pictures. And then we also have an office in Minneapolis, which is like kind of a dev house. There's also Washington, DC, San Francisco, Chicago, London, Berlin. We get, like, I think more than 90 million unique visitors come to BuzzFeed each month from outside the U.S., so international is also something we're focusing on. We launched an office in Mexico City earlier this year, which was pretty awesome. But, yeah, BuzzFeed Motion Pictures is probably the largest office other than NYC. I think it's made up of, like, 200 producers and staff, and that's all based out of L.A.
So if you guys are going, like, worldwide with this stuff, do you have to design knowing that your stuff's going to be in multiple languages as well, or do you just assume that everyone's just going to have to read the English version?
I mean, that's something that we're working with now. So we have an international team with a designated designer, and we have separate editions. So, like, there's a U.S. edition and, like, a British edition, and the idea of translating isn't just, like, Google translating an article. We actually have people translating manually, because really the content, it's not as easy as just saying, like, translate this article for me. So, like, international is definitely something we're focusing on, and the translation process is, like, something that we're kind of, like, learning right now. It's pretty interesting. But, yeah, we have separate editions. So BuzzFeed UK has its, like, own edition with its own content, really.
That's wonderful. Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Emily Brick of BuzzFeed. Emily, welcome back. So one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you today was because you are involved with this year's How Interactive Design Conference, or as once again, there are three of them. The one in San Francisco's passed, and depending on when you listen to this, the one in Chicago and or Boston may already be gone too. But How's been doing three of these for a couple of years now. You're speaking at the one in Chicago here, October 5th through 7th. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so I kind of like shifted a little bit. I originally, like, I had my talk, and I really want to talk about process, because it's something that's really close to my heart, and how we work with each other at BuzzFeed. Because our process shifted from when I started, and now we're working in a more collaborative way, and I really wanted to touch on that, because I think it's really important. So I think I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but I'm probably going to focus mainly on the CSS framework, Living Style Guide, that we're building at BuzzFeed, because that's something that's, like, really exciting. It's kind of, I think it's new and it might be interesting. So because BuzzFeed has so many, like, products, so many different things across the spectrum, we really wanted to basically hone in on a consistent visual footprint across the products. And the way we did that was by 6 months ago, like, starting to build a style guide. It just like really fundamental base styles that sort of tied the product together visually. And I think that is probably what I'm going to end up focusing on, but I do want to touch on process too, so it'll be a mix of the both.
So you guys actually don't even have a true style guide then at this point, is what you're kind of saying?
So we do, it's kind of interesting, we do have a style guide, but it wasn't living, so when I mean living, it wasn't actually like in CSS. Like, we had a style guide in Illustrator or in Sketch, where it was just like laying out the basic style components of the website, but we hadn't really nailed the idea of a living style guide with CSS. When I got to BuzzFeed, the engineers were building, so it's kind of interesting, when I first got to BuzzFeed, the engineers were sort of building their own style guide based around what we call components, and components are like packaged up pieces of the website, so like a newsletter component, or a story lead component, an image component, and the idea that the engineers were building this didn't really bother me so much. It was just the fact that the design team wasn't super involved with it. So we kind of like dialed back a little bit and we started collaborating with the engineers a little and kind of rebuilt the style guide from the ground up, really. It's the first time I've actually, well, not necessarily the first time, but it's the first time that I built such a fully loaded CSS style guide. It's pretty different from anything I've ever actually like done before. And I'm really excited about it. We started using it on the website with a couple projects, and I'm actually, what makes me really happy is that other teams across BuzzFeed that I don't necessarily interact with every day are like really want to use it. Like the data team wants to use it, like BuzzFeed Motion Pictures. Like it's just like, it's really interesting to hear all of these teams that you don't really necessarily interact with every day being like, oh, I heard there was a style guide. Like we'd love to use it and mold it to what we need. And that's kind of the reason that we did it. It was just have like a consistent visual footprint across the core of our products.
No, and I think that's, you always forget when you do stuff like this because you always think of it as behind the scene things. But I find that a lot of people love using style guides because they know that if they follow it, half of their project will be basically approved before they even launch it because they can say, well, I'm following the branded standards, and it all of a sudden will look consistent. And so there is an advantage in corporate America to just wanting to use one of these.
Yeah. And it's also really fast too. Like you don't have to like make choices from scratch because like the ingredients are already there. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, it's a way for us to rapidly iterate on things, rapidly prototype, and also like build new features.
Right. And then I also assume that when you guys do massive changes in the future, it's a way to, where anything that was created with it won't all of a sudden look outdated because it'll automatically be updated.
Yeah. So like if we have, so instead of having like a style that's like called a kicker story, the styles are actually broken down way more than that. So we have like header styles. So like an H1, an H2, an H3, an H4, an H5 all have designated typefaces, and we have like specific colors on the website that get used, specific border radiuses. Like it's really broken down into base styles, but they're the building blocks for like a consistent style. So like it allows freedom, but it also like keeps us from being like having too many like wacky styles across the site. And yeah, if you want to change, like if we decide to change like our H1 to be, you know, 36 pixels instead of like 24 pixels, or like one rem instead of two rems, that'll change everywhere across the site. So we'll have to like go in and change it individually on every place.
Or if you do things like I would recommend, like make them automatically blink heavily.
Yes, I love blinking.
Yeah, you don't see enough blinking headlines. I think it's a lost art form on the web. It needs to come back.
Yeah, blinking and the carousel. I miss the carousels.
Yeah, they haven't really left around here. I still see them around, but they're not in their heyday anymore.
No, I mean I'm talking about like the news carousels. Like I think I saw one on like CNN where like it's like a story that like runs across the screen.
Oh yeah, those I haven't seen in a while.
I know, they're like, they came from TV, like landed on the internet and then left. Kind of interesting. I mean, I see them. I did see them on CNN, and it wasn't like terrible. It was just like kind of interesting practice.
Yeah, it is a little weird because on TV you just kind of watch it and they're kind of throwing the other information. But on the web, you forget that if you want to click on something, then it leaves, and you can't click on it. You just leave the page.
Yeah, exactly.
So, no, that's wonderful. So, when you say living style guide, then like, do you guys have a point? Do you think it's good to have a point on these things where you basically launch it and it's kind of locked down for a set period of time? Like, do you have like an approval process when people want to make changes, or can just anyone go in there and alter this as needed?
So I think like for this, as far as the set time goes, there really is no set time. Like, you constantly change things. I think like one really core piece of BuzzFeed is that, we're extremely experimental, so like we're not afraid to like go in and try something. I think like nothing's bulletproof here, and that's fine. But we do have like a core team working on the style guide. So the way that we're working is just with a like plain old GitHub repo. And you basically, if you want to make a change, we have like weekly meetings, and we also have an IRC, like a chat channel, where we discuss this thing. So you can either like create a ticket, make your point, basically say, like, okay, I'm going to change this thing. And, like, you basically, it involves a lot of communication. We do have these weekly meetings where we talk about the stuff. And if it gets approved, I guess not necessarily approved, but if you can prove your point, like, if you really want to change something and you have a good backup for it, then you can go ahead and create the pull request and make changes on the repo itself. So, it's like everyone that works on Solid, it's pretty autonomous, really. But you do have to make a case if you want to change the Solid app. It's not something that anyone can touch. It's actually not even in our web app. It's just included as like a package. So it's a separate a separate repo. But yeah, it's like I don't want to say approval because I hate that word, but it's more of just like. We get in a room, we hash things out, we talk about things, and if you really want to change something, you can just make a point for it, make a card for it, and then change it, and it's a pull request, and then we all kind of look at it. I think we need, right now our rule is two people have to look at a pull request and approve it in order for that branch to merge into the master branch, which is the style guide.
No, that makes sense, and it is weird because we do talk about process and approval and things like this. And I think about it, and it's like these are corporate America terms, but BuzzFeed's not really corporate America, but it's a big business.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was just thinking today, like, I've always worked on, like, really small teams. Like, before I worked at BuzzFeed, I was working for Shapeways, which was, like, a really – I was, like, you know, like I said, like, I was on a design team of three, and I've always worked for these small teams that felt like a startup, and it was really great. You know, startups have an awesome culture, like – it's very autonomous. You wear a bunch of hats. And I feel like when I got to BuzzFeed, I was really afraid that it was not going to be like that anymore because it was the largest company I've ever joined. And I was really afraid it would kind of be like a stacked org chart, like a waterfall where, like, everything gets handed down to you. There's an approval process for everything. But ironically, like, it's not like that at all. I think we've managed to kind of break the product out into these separate groups. So, like, the web app, and inside of the web app, you have the TMS, you have, like, formats, you have growth, and then inside of those teams, you have even smaller teams. So I'm on a team of only, I think, 5 or 6 people, and it's, like, we feel like our own startup inside of the company, and we're, like, fully stacked, autonomous, highly functional teams, like, working towards a specific mission, which in my case is the CMS. So it feels really good, and it doesn't feel so much like this massive organization. It doesn't feel very corporate. And I think it's really special because I have heard of, like, you know, it does seem like a company this large would have corporate standards. But, like, I don't know. There's a lot of freedom. And we're also, like, super open to experimenting. So if a process isn't working, like, it's totally up to the team to change their own process.
No, and does the whole company still try to maintain, like, a culture of kind of a startup there, I assume, based on what they do, or have they kind of moved a little more corporate?
It depends what, like, I think so. Like, in certain ways, like, where you need to be, like, with HR, like, obviously, like, there are certain, like, processes that we need to abide by, but as far as, like, the tech team, at least, like, it's pretty flexible. Like, there's no set rules. Again, like, it's not a waterfall process. You get things, like, handed down to you. Basically, the way that the tech team works is that every smaller team, so, like, again, I'm on that really tiny team, the CMS team, we're all aware of, like, the higher-level strategy of BuzzFeed, but we're also, like, able to make our own roadmap knowing that higher-level strategy. So we know the higher-level strategy of BuzzFeed, for example, is to focus on, like, distributed content that lives outside of BuzzFeed. So on the CMS team, one way that we could mold our roadmap to fit that strategy would be to make a responsive CMS, for an example. So it's the idea that, like, everyone's aware of the higher-level strategy, but they're also able to impact it. So it's actually, like, it is, again, like, it feels like a startup, but not so unorganized, really.
No, that's great. Well, we're going to take one final break, and we'll be right back with Emily Brick of BuzzFeed. Working on, like, like, how do you guys stay fresh over there at BuzzFeed? Like, do you guys have any things that you do that that maybe have worked out well?
Yeah. So like, one of the things that we did recently, and I joined last December. I think it might have been the first time that we had done a hack week, but we decided to do a hack week. And the idea was that it was literally, and I'm not even kidding, just like a massive Google sheet that had everyone's idea on it. And basically it said, like, just put your idea down, and if you see an idea that you want to work on, just put your name next to that idea.
So like, when you're saying this, like, I've heard of where people do, like, the hack nights or whatever they do in the evening, but this is, like, the whole week of work is hack week.
Yeah, this is, like, put your real work aside. We're just going to, like, hack on whatever we want. And it's kind of a cool idea. So it's, like, we're not, you know, like, we don't sit around at BuzzFeed and be like, oh, how can we be more like X? Like, how can we be more like the New York Times? Like, that's not what we do. Like,
I think New York Times is probably thinking, how can we be more like BuzzFeed? But I don't think you guys would be like, hey, maybe we should print a BuzzFeed newspaper.
You never know. But the idea is, like, for us, it's kind of like, what should we do next? Not like, what should we do next to get us to be more like this company? So the idea of Hack Week was just to kind of, like, spin up ideas, like, totally from the bottom up. There was no, like, top-down going on here. So everyone kind of, like, put an idea into this Google sheet, and then if you put your name down if you wanted to work on something. And for 1 week, you worked on a team of your choice, on a product of your choice. So the cool thing about this was that there's, like, so many different teams across BuzzFeed. So we often, like, I don't usually get to work with people on the data team or, like, the ad product team. So this was, like, a chance to really just, like, work with anyone. So I ended up making a team with two guys and a girl from, like, our internal data team, and that was really awesome. And it's amazing what came out of it. Like, at the end of the week, we had kind of like a show and tell, and one of those Hack Week projects ended up influencing our Apple Watch app, which is like this Tamagotchi for BuzzFeed. Another one, and there's like a ton of projects that are kind of like working in production right now, and like, it's just amazing that, like, you give somebody, you know, like, the team members a chance to just kind of, like, do whatever they want, and you have no idea what's going to come out of that. And it ends up being, like, really successful. And I think there's a couple reasons it was so successful, but, like, not only are, like, the people that we work with extremely creative, but the idea that you can focus on one thing in an entire week and not have to divvy up your time between, like, all these little tasks really ensure that, like, you were going to, like, finish the thing in a week, which is pretty awesome. Like, you set your own roadmap knowing that you had only 5 days to do it. And most people, like, finished the product, and, like, Cap Watkins made, like, a Chrome extension for BuzzFeed. Like, it was just, like, insane, I think, the things that came out of it. So, yeah, we ended up using the Hack Week model to work from, I mean, my team specifically ended up doing this thing called Tweak Week, which is sort of like Hack Week, but the idea is that it's like Hack Week for your own team. So you work on one thing all week within your team and just, like, really get that thing done.
Yeah, because you forget, like, when you actually drop all the little projects you're doing the day and just focus on one thing, you can be pretty productive.
Yeah, I think focus is, like, I mean, I keep bringing this up at Buzzy because it's just, like, focus is so valuable. And it's something that, like, we often say, like, oh, you know, just do this one card, and, like, you can finish the other stuff later. But those, like, side little projects often, like, take up all of your time. So now we're, like, really cognizant of how to, like, be most productive, and it's cool. It's, like, it's nice to have the ability to, like, test different processes without, like, worrying so much about, like, oh my god, what if this process doesn't work? Like, it's okay. Like, we're totally open to experimentation.
Yeah, I assume that not everything that was created during Hack Week, for one reason or another, was probably used, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't a successful event.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there were some, like, really crazy things that came out of it. There was, like, a lot of cat games. I mean, this was, like, a couple months ago now, but I think a couple cat games came out of it. But really, like, one of the coolest things was the Tamagotchi. It wasn't Tamagotchi. We called it a Watchagotchi for a while because it was intended to be on the Apple Watch. But now I think it's called, like, BuzzFeed BFF. And it's the idea that you're, like, keeping a little guy alive on your Apple Watch. It's pretty cool.
Oh, man, I don't know if I can get a watch because I can barely keep myself going during the day. I can't keep some other thing going.
I know, right? And, like, you really have to be responsible. I think mine's, like, dead. I honestly haven't checked it in a couple days.
I know.
I wasn't good with the original Tamagotchi either, though. Like, I was never made for that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, I mean, it's fun. It's fun to work. It's cool when you think about, like, all the different things you get to work on. Like, you know, that's one of our, like, experimental apps. So it's interesting, you know, the ability to just experiment on different things, like, without worrying so much on, like, oh, my God, is this going to be totally successful? Like, you know, there's no way to know if something's going to be successful. Like, we can't predict the future. We can only just be extremely flexible about how fast we ship things and how quickly we can iterate on them.
No, that's true. What's the favorite thing that you've done at BuzzFeed so far, or that you've seen coming up BuzzFeed since you've been there?
I think I'm something I'm really excited about right now. This idea right now, like, we've been working on. I'm on the CMS team, and we're working on this idea of, like, rethinking the CMS because it's just a really interesting challenge. So editors create content on their desktop computer, like, that's where they make the articles. Rarely do you find an editor, like, writing an article out on their phone, which, like, maybe one day. But right now, like, for us, most of the editors create their content on a desktop computer. So the CMS, naturally, is a desktop experience.
Sure.
But the interesting part is, like, most of our traffic is mobile right now. That's no surprise. And not only that, but we're like, really getting, like, ramping up distributed content, which means, like, it doesn't only live on BuzzFeed anymore. So it looks great in the CMS. It's a desktop experience. We really want to give the editors the opportunity to see their content, or, like, see a preview of their content, really, at different breakpoints, at different viewports, at different, not necessarily different devices, but just the ability for their content to flex in and out. And so they're not looking at a desktop article being like, this is what my article looks like. They're able to see their article at different viewports or breakpoints. Because that's the reality. Like, we can't give them a preview of the Apple News app, these instant articles, and the BuzzFeed News. Like, we can't give them all these previews of their article in all these platforms, but we can give them a preview that's necessarily responsive. So something that they can see their content flex in and out. And that's something I'm really interested in right now, is, like, not necessarily a WYSIWYG experience in the CMS, but something that will give them some kind of idea that, hey, I'm not making this article for desktop. I'm making this article for all kinds of platforms. So that's something that's, like, kind of challenging for us, but also really interesting.
No, that makes sense. And then you'll have to have the WYSIWYG where it shows them what it'll look like when you make your newspaper version of,
yeah,
BuzzFeed,
exactly.
that I'm trying to push you for now, so.
It'll, like, print out the Buzz Times or something, yeah.
Right, right.
While they publish, I know.
All right, Emily, well, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to hearing feedback on how you do at the How Interactive Design Conference.
Definitely.
Is this the first time you've been to the conference?
Yeah, this is. This is my first time, and I think I might be the first one going. I'm not positive. I'm really excited, though. I think it's going to be awesome.
That's the ideal speaker time, because then you can actually, like, enjoy the event and enjoy the social hours,
yeah,
and stuff. Like, the person who goes last, they're miserable.
Yeah, and this is, like, the first time I'm going to be in Chicago that I can, like, actually hang out there and, like, experience the city. So I'm super pumped.
No, we look forward to it. And thank you guys, everybody, for listening to the show. We'll be back in a couple weeks from Design Camp, which actually I think we spoke off the air about that. I saw Cap Watkins, who's now over there at BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
I saw him at Design Camp last year, and he hadn't moved to BuzzFeed at the time, but he seems like he's quite the creative guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
So we look forward to seeing you, and thanks for listening.
Thanks so much.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Meary is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.